Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
This is Mark Sobel, U.S. Chair, OMFIF. Today, I have the great honor of being joined by Alessandro Rivera, Director General of the Italian Treasury. Alessandro is Italy's representative for finance deputies meetings of the G7, G20, and the IMF. He's a member of the Economic and Financial Committee and the Euro Working Group of the European Union. This year, he's chairing the G20 Finance and Central Bank Deputies meetings, along with his central bank colleague. And prior to his current position, Alessandro was head of the Directorate for Banking and Financial System at the Tesoro for 10 years. Alessandro is joining us today to discuss the Italian G20 presidency, as well as the finance agenda, including in the aftermath of the successful G20 finance ministers meeting at the end of February. So welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. We are at the beginning of our long journey this year as G20 presidency. I'm happy to share with you the ideas around which we are working, the objective that we will pursue and hopefully achieve.
Fantastic. Well, let's dig in. Italy is this year's G20 president. Presidencies must carry on with an existing G20 agenda, with the Troika, as it's called, and usually add a few accents of its own. And of course, the finance channel is only one aspect of the presidency. To kick us off, can you tell us a bit about how the pieces fit together? What are the aims of the Italian presidency? And then maybe list off what are the key issues of the finance agenda? And then we can just dig one by one into those finance issues.
Yes, surely. We expect this year the global economy to bounce back from the deepest recession since the World War II. But the recovery is so far still weak and uneven, subject to a lot of uncertainties on the evolution of the pandemic. We will operate under this scenario, and our goal is to steer and encourage global policymakers to continue their efforts to overcome the pandemic and foster a sustainable and balanced recovery, ensuring that the world in the future is better prepared to cope with the unforeseen shocks. The juncture that we are in the middle of provides an opportunity to develop also new paradigms to promote transformative growth and to revamp multilateralism as the guiding principle of international cooperation. This certainly will be at the core of the approach that we'll be having. As you may have already heard and know, our overall vision is structured on three pillars, which we may refer to as the three Ps, 3P endeavors: people, planet, and prosperity, inclusion, sustainability, digital transformation. Within this framework, the finance track has an important role to play in bridging the effort to sustain the recovery with the development of long-term strategies to shape a greener and more digital and inclusive societies. We have identified six priority challenges. First of all, we will pursue the principle of public health as a global common good. Building on the experience of the pandemic, we will work to ensure that future generations are better prepared against similar shocks. Second, we will promote an international environment that will be more conducive to investment and growth and foster close policy coordination. We have to bear in mind that the crisis broke out in a context of declining growth. We will put a strong focus on how investments on innovation and digitalization can increase productivity. Third priority is maintaining global financial stability and also enhancing financial inclusion. Digitalization has a great potential to improve financial access for vulnerable groups and small and medium enterprises, but it might also be a source of exclusion. We will take care of that. Fourth, We will support vulnerable economies and strengthen the international financial architecture. We have already adopted in the international community very important initiatives to address liquidity needs, debt suspension, debt treatments. But looking forward, we have to do more, and we will have also to gradually shift towards addressing longer-term financing needs of low-income countries. Fifth goal is promoting a fairer and more transparent international tax system. This is key to promote global trust, and expectations are very high on us, on the G20 members, to make progress on that. Final, I would mention the need that we see that to meet the challenge of improving the living conditions for all while protecting our planet. We believe that the international commitments to address the climate change, climate risks, the environmental degradation cannot be postponed. We will promote a worldwide transition towards modern, resource-efficient, and competitive economies in line fully with the objectives of the Paris Agreement. I would stop here. These are the priorities that we have for the finance track.
It sounds as if you're going to be a busy gentleman this year with that agenda. And I really welcome your focus on reviving and restoring multilateralism. I think that's a wonderful message. Well, let's turn to the global economy. You gave us an appetizer. Obviously, the global economy and the overcoming the pandemic are completely interwoven issues. Last year, as you alluded to, the G20 expressed concern about a premature withdrawal of support. Now, most analysts, certainly in the United States, expect that with vast vaccine rollout and lots of fiscal and monetary policy support, we're on steroids here. We're expecting a very, very big second half in America. Europe is seen also as recovering, but lagging a bit behind. China appears to have handled the virus much better in its own way and is already seemingly in full recovery. But the authorities seem to be running relatively restrained policies given concerns about leverage. There still are a lot of risks about the timing of vaccine rollout and when we reach herd immunity. So, you know, at the finance minister's meeting a little bit more than a week ago, how did the ministers and governors see the global outlook and the balance of risks, and what were their main thoughts and conclusions?
Yes, ministers and governors had the chance to discuss these important matters. The view is that the recovery is actually expected to strengthen in 2021. Vaccines rollout is key for that, mass vaccination campaigns, and also the easing of containment measures that comes with the deployment of vaccines. Together with that, also the policy support is extremely important in accompanying the recovery. That remains, however, still rather weak and exposed to many uncertainties. The outlook remains uncertain and exposed to substantial downside risks. You have mentioned some of them, such as also, for instance, remaining in the health matters, in the health camp, the variants that we are seeing all around the globe. Against this background, finance ministers and the central bank governors have agreed on the need to keep a bold policy support in place as long as the economic and health conditions require to remain supportive. We have to learn from the 28 and 29 experience, the great financial crisis. We have to avoid a premature withdrawal of support measures that might endanger the strengthening of the recovery, not only at domestic level, but also at global level. in the current juncture, maximizing the impact and the positive spillover effects that stem from the fiscal and monetary responses to the crisis is a precondition for a more faster recovery. Going forward and thinking of a more, let's say, medium-term perspective, the necessary phase-out, the necessary phasing out of the supportive measures have to be progressive and cautious. There are many uncertainties, as I said, that surround the evolution of the epidemiological situation. And on top of that, I would add, we need to avoid any cliff effect. At the same time, our recovery strategies shall continue to protect the most vulnerable and counter inequality and poverty. This is certainly the most effective way to foster a sustainable and inclusive recovery. These are the broad principles the ministers and governors discussed, and we have registered a convergence on them.
And I assume, as in the past, between the IMF and the Framework Working Group, you will be monitoring the implementation of these principles.
Certainly, yes. The working groups will all be active in that direction because there are aspects that are dealt with in various working groups, but certainly the Framework Working Group is at the core of this work.
Well, thank you for that. You know, you mentioned that one of Italy's goals is to focus on how we can boost productivity and potential growth, noting that, that before the pandemic, growth had been ebbing. So I was wondering about that and about the role of infrastructure in your presidency. You know, President Biden campaigned on Build Back Better, and he's expected to launch soon an infrastructure plan with an emphasis on climate issues and perhaps some tax measures. And I remember from my G20 days, the Australian presidency made infrastructure just a major theme in an effort to promote higher potential growth. In Europe, you have the Next Generation EU Fund, and I know that's a major point of discussion in Italy right now. So did the ministers discuss potential growth, productivity, and infrastructure agenda?
Yes, they did. We will discuss during our presidency a lot about technological transformation, how this translates into productivity growth, and where is productivity gone in some cases. But we also have an important program in the infrastructure field. It has remained at the center of the G20 discussion for many years, as you were recalling. Investment in quality infrastructure has a critical role in spurring economic recovery and setting the ground for sustainable and inclusive growth. This has been shown clearly also by the crisis, how important it is that reliable and high-quality infrastructure systems are there to respond to unexpected external shocks and to deliver quality services. Health sector, telecommunications, digital connectivity, logistics, these are all key for being able to respond to shocks. Against this backdrop, we will continue to work on the implementation of the G20 principles for quality infrastructure investments, and we will focus on four components: resilient, digital, green, and inclusive infrastructure. We aim to promote infrastructures, including the digital ones, as a way to foster social inclusion, reduce geographical disparities, and improve environmental sustainability, making sure that nobody is left behind along the path to more digital and innovative societies is one of our key priorities. Within the finance track, we have a dedicated, as you know, a dedicated subgroup, the Infrastructure Working Group, that will pursue these priorities. Let me also add that investment in infrastructure should not be limited to only to new and large scale projects. On the contrary, we have to be more and more cautious and careful there. There is an impact also that has to be considered, an impact on the environment. Good practices at local level should be encouraged. And it is important to also put at the core of the policies on infrastructure the need to maintain and optimize the existing assets. This should have a high priority. We have to preserve the infrastructure and make it more resilient over the life cycle. We have to minimize losses and disruptions and secure the provision of safe, reliable and high quality services, as I said.
Thank you. I mentioned climate, of course, in the United States. The debate also involves maintaining existing infrastructure, as you just mentioned, roads, bridges. And then there's a lot of talk about building out broadband connectivity here as well. Well, let's carry on with the components of the agenda. Next on my list, I think we have the same list, but next on my list was the international financial architecture. I know there's a lot of attention globally on this question of an SDR allocation, special drawing rights allocation. I personally have been long quite concerned about excessive and unsustainable non-traditional official creditor lending in low-income countries, among others, much of that coming from China, and whether that ought not to be written down when debts are unsustainable. The G20 put forward a common framework last year. I felt that was a step forward, but it struck me as only a start in the direction of China beginning to observe, shall I say, Paris Club-like principles. The private sector doesn't seem to be contributing. I'm sure there are other architectural issues, but these are the two big ones that I've seen out there. I was wondering if they were discussed and you made whether you made progress on them at your meeting.
This is certainly going to be a complicated discussion. And also in this respect, we will adopt the multilateral approach and try to do our best to bridge the gaps that still exist. The crisis has clearly put a strain on the financing needs of the most fragile economies. Ministers and governors are certainly aware that this has important risks jeopardizing development prospects after a decade of progress in reducing poverty, including in African countries, also thanks to the policies that the G20 has approved in the past, has agreed in the past. So we have adopted several initiatives to help address the immediate liquidity needs and the balance of payments difficulties for the most vulnerable countries. We will follow up on these initiatives. They include the debt service suspension initiative and also the common framework you were referring to on debt treatments. These are agreed. Of course, now it's time to implement them in the Olson framework. The G20 will remain the reference place for discussing how to interpret the framework and how to put it in practice. While, of course, the Paris Club will deal with the practical and specific negotiations. The SSI has provided meaningful liquidity support to some of the most vulnerable countries in the world. For some, the benefit of the participation has been substantial as share of the GDP and has had an important role in supporting social health and economic spending in the context of the pandemic. The extension to end June 2021 will already reach will increase the resources made available. We are committed to review by April whether further extension to end 2021 is needed. This review will be done together with on the basis, I would say, of the analysis that is being carried on by the IMF and the World Bank on the external financing needs in low-income countries in the coming years. As I said, resources made available were significant. At the end of 2020, 46 out of 77 DSSI eligible countries have requested to benefit from the DSSI, debt suspension. The overall suspension has reached 5.7 billion of debt service deferral, which for the target country, as I said, is an important part of the GDP share. These efforts are not sufficient to create enough fiscal space to cope with the crisis and secure debt sustainability for the most leveraged borrowers. We called in the meeting, we had the ministers and the governors in the meeting they had on the 26th of February, they called on international financial institutions to explore additional tools to meet the needs. And I think that a new special drawing rights allocation on a large scale would help boost global reserves and support countries with foreign exchange difficulties. This has already been used in the global financial crisis and has proved to be a precious tool to boost confidence and support emerging markets and developing countries. It could be as precious as in that chance also in the current crisis. We are working with the G20 to forge consensus on a new general allocation. The IMF has committed to formulate a proposal for a general allocation. On the basis of the discussion that we have on the 26th, I think that perspectives are positive. You are referring to other important problems. The need to ensure level playing fields, the need to ensure that there is enough and equal understanding of the debt oppositions. We attach great importance to achieve concrete progress on debt transparency issues. This is what is also part of our program. We are working to ensure a broad participation by G20 members, including, of course, private creditors. We do not think that in terms of debt transparency, political matters, a confrontational approach is going to bring results. We risk instead undermining the progress achieved to date. We need to engage with all the countries and build trust towards a consensual solution.
Of course, at times one needs to push the envelope a little bit forward to get results. And I commend you for your focus on debt transparency. Financial regulatory cooperation. I think you and I have worked a good bit on that in the past. It's a part of the agenda which maybe doesn't receive much attention, but you have tremendous expertise there. And I actually think that among the greatest accomplishments of the G20 were in this area after the global financial crisis by building up the Financial Stability Board after the crisis. And moving forward, I think there was very good progress in tackling capital, liquidity, and leverage for banks, particularly the G-SIBs, as we call them. The Financial Stability Board frequently would get directions from the G20, shall we say, in communiques and guidance. And that would play a major role then in working or loosely coordinating the Basel Committee and others, IOSCO, et cetera. Now, the activity has gravitated from better regulated banks to less regulated non-banks. And I think that was part of the problem underlying the ructions we saw in the markets last March. The FSB is also working on central clearing, cyber risk, cross-border payments. And you've mentioned the word digital many times. I assume that gets us into the world of digital currencies. I'd like to come back to climate finance later, but how would you characterize the finance agenda for 2021? What are you looking to accomplish this year?
You are right. The G20, in the context of the global financial crisis and the remedial action, has done a lot in these fields. And it does remain the forum where things of related to financial stability continue to be discussed, and where guidance for the FSB is given, political guidance and the expectations that ministers and governors have on the FSB agenda and objectives. And you mentioned an important aspect that is being looked at by the FSB, and for which we have asked as a presidency to deliver and to bring results, concrete results over this year. The share of financial assets held by non-banks has grown at the global level and is now almost 50%. This growth has, of course, benefits, but can also lead to some problems, as it has been shown by the March turmoil episode, where some non-bank segments experienced significant stress and contributed to amplify the shock. On the 26th of February, the meeting I referred to several times before, ministers and governors have agreed that, building on the FSB holistic review of the March turmoil, we will work to strengthen the resilience of non-bank financial intermediation, while, of course, preserving the benefits. The focus will be on lessons learned during the pandemic and on the need to assess whether some changes to the current financial regulatory framework is needed, on the international coordination in the future and gradual unwinding of support measures, addressing the corporate debt overhang and the potential surge in corporate insolvencies, also involving the otherwise liable companies. A first objective of this work will be to develop policy options to address weaknesses in some non-bank financial intermediation segments, such as money market funds, stemming from liquidity mismatches and from certain structures and regulations that may have reinforced redemption dynamics. Other long-term areas of work will include the analysis of issues raised by liquidity risks management in open-ended funds, potential procyclicality of the margins in centrally cleared and uncleared markets, also enhanced risk monitoring and the development of a macroprudential approach for non-bank financial intermediations. Ministers and governors also agreed that the finance agenda, as you mentioned, will envisage also important work to enhance cross-border payments. Kickstarting the implementation of the G20 roadmap is a key priority. The roadmap has been approved under the Saudi presidency. Now it needs to be implemented. A set of targets will be developed for measuring progress and will be endorsed by the G20 in October. They also agreed that the finance agenda will include also continuing work on cyber risks. The work will focus on cyber incidents and promoting further harmonization of regulatory reporting of financial institutions to their regulators and supervisors to better address this kind of risks.
That should keep you more than busy. I wish you good luck with this agenda. You know, we had money market fund problems in the global financial crisis, and then we had them again last March, and one would have hoped we would have tackled them. And I obviously think that given the highly accommodative nature of monetary policy these days, we need good macroprudential tools to deal with some of the financial stability risks. Well, just to show that you don't have easy issues to deal with this year, there's global tax cooperation, or the lack thereof. And this has been a longstanding G20 issue. The OECD has long been leading efforts on this front. They ran into some obstacles last year. As I understand it, there were two issues on the table. There was a global minimum tax, and digital taxation. I recall from my days, the Obama administration supported a minimum tax, and I think the Trump tax reforms or changes in 2017 went in that direction. Both administrations, Obama and Trump, had issues with the digital work. They thought Europe was too focused on U.S. tech firms and not addressing its own firms' competitive tax behavior or things like low tax rates and patent boxes and the like. As an outside observer these days, I think it's important that progress be made on tax, because I think absent that, it will frustrate other areas of U.S.-European cooperation. What are your presidency's objectives in this area? Do you think America has some decent concerns? Are you expecting to make progress this year?
Definitely, yes. We expect to make progress. We are committed to do so. At the summit, leaders agreed that the deadline for achieving an agreement and an acceptable compromise is mid-year. So by summer, we need to find an agreement. Ministers and governors have focused on the need to reform the current system to respond to the challenges that are posed by globalization and digitalization. On the basis of a renewed constructive engagement, facilitated a lot by the approach taken by the new U.S. administration, the G20 aims at achieving the consensus-based solution by the deadline already agreed by the leaders. We will devote all our energies to achieve the consensus that is needed for having this agreement, building on the progress made in the negotiations at the inclusive framework in the OECD. You have recalled the two pillars, pillar one, digital taxation, and pillar two, the global minimum tax. After many years of work and debates, reforming the tax rules has become really urgent. It is crucial to establish a more stable and fair international tax system and to support, in order to support a sustainable global recovery also. As I said, the new administration in the U.S. has facilitated a lot of tasks, apparently. In the letter sent by the Secretary of the Treasury, Yellen, to the G20 colleagues on the eve of the meeting on the 25th of February, she expressed a renewed U.S. commitment to reaching a multilateral solution on both pillars within the OECD and the G20 inclusive framework proposals for the international taxation reform. And during the meeting, she has further clarified that the new administration is ready to abandon the approach proposed by the former one, the safe harbor one, that would not work and would certainly not help in having the consensus solution by the deadline, ambitious deadline that we have set.
Great. Thank you for that. Good luck with moving forward on that. And another tough issue to tackle this year is climate. That is a major agenda, but maybe we can confine it to discussing the financial regulatory area. There's a lot of focus on climate disclosure and risks. There's a lot of focus on working on more uniform standards, especially with regard to ESG. Can you tell us what the finance track is doing in the climate field and what you would like to achieve this year?
At the beginning of our interview, I said that the current context is certainly very challenging, but it does also offer an opportunity to orient the recovery policies towards a more sustainable and inclusive development model. We have set up an ambitious green agenda that will be at the core of the Italian G20 presidency. We believe that the international commitments have to be respected, and we cannot anymore postpone the achievement, implementation of the objectives and the policies that we have already agreed. We will promote a transition towards modern, more efficient, resilient and competitive economies in line also with the path that the European level we have agreed with the new Green Deal. We have also another important opportunity this year because we have not only G20 presidency, but we are also COP26 co-presidency. So we will push with conviction the goal established in the Paris Agreement to contain the global temperature increase below the 1.5 Celsius degrees thresholds. This also in this case, this high ambitions is also supported by the new stance of the US administration that opens a window of opportunity to relaunching the dialogue on climate change and environmental degradation. It is a cross-cutting priority across all the finance track activities, ranging from the inclusion of environmental risks in macroeconomic risks analysis, the impact of green investment on productivity, the potential of nature-based solutions applied to infrastructure. Every working group in the G20 finance track will be occupied, will be devoting time and efforts to our green agenda. The Italian presidency will also endeavor to open a debate and make progress on a number of sensitive but crucial topics such as environmental taxation and also sustainable finance. The financial system plays a key role in supporting the transition. We are all aware of that to ensure that capital is allocated efficiently. Some critical challenges have to be addressed, such as the adoption of globally comparable, high-quality and auditable standards of disclosure in sustainability reporting. We relaunched a dedicated group on sustainable finance, the Sustainable Finance Study Group, that was discontinued 2 years ago. We have decided to reopen it. The research program of this study group is still to be finalized, together with the two co-chairs that will be USA and China. They have accepted our invite to play this role, and we are particularly happy for that. We intend to pursue two main areas of research. First, improving quality, availability, and comparability of data to assess climate-related financial risks and opportunities. And second, exploring how financial, fiscal, and monetary policies can promote sustainable development. The dialogue on climate policy action will be taken forward also on the occasion of a high-level conference between ministers, governors, and eminent persons that will be held on the 11th of July in Venice. Hopefully, this will be our first meeting in person after more than 1 year. We cross fingers. I believe that it can be an occasion to build the necessary political momentum to ensure that the sustainable transformation of the global economic system remains on top of the global agenda also in the coming years. So this year certainly offers the best conditions for bringing climate cooperation back at the center of international relations. The feedback that we received from the first meeting of the ministers and governors was very encouraging. So twin presidencies, G20 and COP26, we are committed to promote a systemic change that places environmental sustainability at the core of the recovery.
Sounds like a fantastic agenda. I wish you the best of luck. Time is getting short. Are there any issues you wish to flag for us that we didn't cover or points from the Italian presidency?
Yes, there is an important topic that I would like to add, on which, of course, I already gave some hints. It's on top of our priorities, health matters, health risks. The pandemic is at the top of our agenda. As I said repeatedly, we cannot have a stable recovery unless we resolve this problem and we eradicate the pandemic everywhere. All G20 members are aware that the sooner we will ensure that vaccines reach every country, the fastest we will be able to stop the human losses caused by the pandemic, to control the spread of variations, mutations of the virus, and to start, of course, the recovery. We are concerned by the different pace of vaccination campaigns around the world. And for these reasons, we will ensure that the collaboration and the multilateral approach to guarantee an equitable distribution of safe and affordable and effective vaccines continues. G20 has already done many things. It has sustained the ACT Accelerator, ACT A, which has probably been the most successful effort in the history to support a fast and coordinated response to fight a disease. We also supported the ACT A vaccine pillar, the COVAX, that has been crucial to procure vaccines and to coordinate the country assessment and readiness plans to also to establish the legal framework to allow the first vaccine rollout in low and middle income countries. So the progress, however, has been slow so far. Thanks to the efforts by donors and the partners, the vaccination campaign will start soon in Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire as the first step to guarantee that no country in the world is left behind. However, we have still the need for time for deploying fully the vaccines. The G20 has reaffirmed the importance of supporting all the pillars of the ACT A, namely the diagnostic, the therapeutic, and the health system strengthening. At the same time, we have to make sure that the available resources are adequate. We have heard the strong message approved by the G7 leaders in order to double on the efforts that we have already done. And we also have to ensure to start thinking of the future and ensure that we are better prepared against the similar shocks in the future. This means not only directing public investment to the health sector, but also understanding if the global framework in which our response to the COVID-19 outbreak has developed is actually appropriate or should be enhanced. We have set up to this purpose a panel of high-level independent experts. This panel is tasked to identify gaps in the pandemic preparedness with a focus, of course, on financing aspects. The main objective is to identify and devise practicable solutions to fill the gaps in the financing of pandemic prevention, surveillance, preparedness, and response. So we look forward to receive the recommendations by this panel. They should be finalized by next July. On the basis of this report, ministers and governors will discuss the policy response in October at the annual meetings.
Thank you for that. It's very important that the COVAX initiative succeed. And you've just reminded us how busy your year is going to be. Well, I should let you get back to work or to go home. I thank you for offering us this fantastic presentation and insight into Italy's G20 agenda and the finance agenda in particular. Grazie, auguri e buona fortuna.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.